This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Hear me now. Believe me later, Bear fans, your dream is reality. Begin the migration to Miami and Super Bowl 41, Bears 39, Saints 14.
And welcome into The Score for Sunday, March 29th. I'm David Schuster. I'm going to keep you company up until 8 o'clock this evening. Our phone number, as always, 312-644-6767. You can text us at 67011. You just heard the voice of Jeff Joniak, the longtime now announcer for Chicago Bears broadcast on our sister station, WBBM. And Jeff will be joining us in about 13 minutes at 5:20. And I had to look this up. Jeff's been doing the Bears games now since the year 2000. My God, how time does fly. But besides Jeff here on the show at 5:20, you will be hearing also from Tom Doerr. He was the Bulls broadcaster for 17 years. Tom will be joining us at 6:30. And Tom, of course, was the broadcaster when Michael Jordan, 25 years ago today, scored those 55 points. It was the double nickel at Madison Square Garden, his fourth game back when he came back from baseball and played basketball. And Tom Doerr will be joining us at 6:30. And then at 7 o'clock, my buddy Bruce Levine will be joining us to talk everything about baseball. Again, our number, as always, 312-644-6767. And, of course, you can always text us on the Tech Zone at 67011, and it's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time and shop online at rosenhyundai.com. And if you like listening to the Bears broadcast today, well, you're in luck. We're going to be doing this for the next 7 Sundays right here on The Score. And also a reminder, we're going to start replaying the Cubs' run to the World Championship from the calendar year 2016. Seems like a long time ago already, but it was just 3 years ago, actually 4 years ago now, and that will begin on Wednesday night, Game 1 of the National League Divisional Series, and we'll have those broadcasts starting at 6 o'clock on Wednesday night. My producer and co-pilot back in the studio, Adam Studzinski, he'll be followed up by Julio Roseo. He'll be coming in at 6 o'clock, and I want to recap initially, well, actually even before that, I want to do something that I know everybody who's listening right now and certainly thinking of this on a daily basis, but I want to pass on my personal thank yous to the heroes of this nation right now. Obviously, this country and the world is going through an incredible crisis right now with the coronavirus ongoing, and it's had such a unfortunate, profound effect on everybody from a negative standpoint, but it's also brought out a lot of positives for you know, a lot of love is going around. A lot of thankfulness is also going around on my behalf, on everybody at the station's behalf, everybody in the whole Entercom family. So I just want to pass on my personal thank yous to anybody and everybody who works in the medical field. You folks, if you're listening, you people are absolute heroes to me. You people are putting your own lives on the line to try and save lives. And God knows we appreciate each and every person here should appreciate what you folks are doing. And it's not just the people in the medical field. They, of course, are on the front lines, but so is everybody else who is still working on the outside. Now, I'm fortunate enough today, like a lot of my brethren, to be working from my house and doing this broadcast. And we're so thankful for having the technology to be able to do this. But for all those people who are still going into work in the grocery stores, in the drug stores, at gas stations, what have you. You people are heroes also. So God bless all of you. please stay healthy and please follow through on what you're supposed to do. Keep your distance. The social distancing is very important. Stay home if you can. Very, very important. But again, special thank yous to all those people who I've already mentioned. Again, back in the studio, Adam Studzinski. And Adam, we just finished up that tremendous game at Soldier Field. And I do remember it. I was in attendance that day against the New Orleans Saints. And I know you were probably watching it back home on TV. What were your remembrances both then and now of today's game that we just listened to?
Oh, man, I watched that game at my sister's house with my parents and my really young nephew, who was several months old at that point. I don't know if it was that game. I think it was actually the Seahawks game where I was actually holding him and something went wrong for the Bears. And I said, I can't hold this kid anymore. He's bad luck. So I had to hand him off. But anyway, so I remember I watched that game at my sister's house, and man, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, that's the pinnacle of my life as a Bears fan to this point, was that game. And then the Devin Hester kickoff return in the Super Bowl. It was awesome. Like the snow coming down and everything. I remember just sitting there like, man, this is so cool. I didn't know that that was going to be the only time that I got to experience that for a long time, but it was pretty cool as a 16-year-old to see that.
You know what I remember, and again, I was in attendance that day up in a warm press box, and then eventually, obviously, we went down either to the field or into the locker rooms afterwards, but that was just a prototypical Lovie Smith kind of game, if you will. I mean, the Bears' offense was okay. Actually, they were outgained in that game, if I remember correctly, by about 40 yards, 375 to 335, I'm looking it up right now, by the Saints, but the Bears' defense, as always, came up with turnovers. And that was really the staple of a Lovie Smith team, and specifically his defense. They came up with four turnovers. They did not turn over the ball themselves. The offensive line did not allow any sacks. Brian Urlacher, you know, Reggie Bush said that he was going to score one touchdown. Okay, he did score his one touchdown, and he sort of taunted Urlacher going into the end zone, who was chasing him. But Urlacher got the final word, because the Bears obviously won the game, and Urlacher was Urlacher like most games that he was. He was still a stud. So, you know, all in all, it was an interesting game, and it was a fun time. You know, you heard it in Jeff's voice, and we'll ask him about that literally in just a few minutes when we get him on the air here. But you could just hear the excitement, and you could hear how he was so happy for the city of Chicago. And that really was what it is for me all the time. So when Chicago teams do win, I feel so much pride of living here in Chicago, and you could hear it in Jeff's voice.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing, too, is I'd never actually, until today, heard the radio call of the game. I'd heard, like, a few highlights from Jeff, so I'd never actually been able to hear the full radio call because we watched it on TV. So I heard what it was on Fox, right? So it would have been probably Joe Buck and whoever his partner was at that time. I don't know, was Aikman with him at that point? I can't remember.
I'm not really sure. I know Terry Bradshaw was part of the broadcast, and you know, he did the interview on the field afterwards, but I'm not really sure who the color commentator. It might have been Aikman.
Yeah, well, it's irrelevant. So I'd never been able to hear like how Jeff and Tom handled it, and I mean, that was really cool actually being able to sit here and hear that, because I was like, man, yeah, you could tell how excited they were, and like you said, like how proud they were and like how happy they were for the fans of Chicago. Because, you know, at that point, it had been 21 years or something like that since they'd been to the Super Bowl. And it'd been, you know, almost two decades since they'd even been in an NFC Championship game. So, I mean, yeah, that was really cool. And I mean, I remember even just like sitting at home and seeing, you know, Virginia McCaskey get the trophy and Brian Urlacher host the George House trophy. It was like, this is awesome. Like, that was so cool.
Yeah, and the fans hung around for a long, long time, obviously, to, you know, witness the festivities on the field after the game, even though it started snowing and it was plenty cold that day. I also remember, you know, we saw both good Rex and bad Rex all season long, and that was sort of the theme with Rex Grossman in a Bears uniform. But there was one stretch in the third quarter, I think, and I think you heard Tom talk about it in the postgame, where he was 4-of-4 for 78 yards. And, you know, he was basically instrumental in that drive right after they scored the safety to go up by four. And then he led the team down the field and they, you know, went up by 11 and then they pulled away, obviously, in the fourth quarter. So, you know, that game in a nutshell was good Rex, bad Rex. But he was really good Rex when he needed to be, specifically in that game.
And he never made the backbreaking mistake in that game. So like, he never turned the ball over. He had some bad throws. Like, he had that, you know, he overthrew Des Clark in the end zone. And, you know, just missed some guys here and there, but he never made the mistake that was like, oh, man, like, that's the backbreaker. And he let, you know, he let the defense do its thing. You know, I remember after they got that safety when I was watching the game. Once they got that safety and they went up four, I was like, "This game's over. Like they're gonna win. This is over. Like they're not even gonna need to score another point. Like it's over."
Well, you know, I'm trying to think because you said a lot of people picked against them. I think they were the favorites, but honestly, I don't remember.
They were. I actually was looking at this earlier. The Bears were favored by 3 points.
Okay.
So if you're curious, you bettors out there, it was the Bears covered and the over hit.
Okay. You know, when you're favored by 3 in general, that means the game is favored. It is a pick'em game because they give you the 3 points for being the home team. So I guess a lot of the national pundits probably went one way or the other. But again, the defense was the turning point in that game with the turnovers. And that's exactly what they did when they were really good under Lovie Smith. That's what they did. Pina Tillman and Urlacher and all the rest of those guys. And they came up with 4 big turnovers that day. All right, why don't we take a break real quickly here right now, if we can, Adam. And when we come back, we're going to hear the voice that you heard doing the play-by-play of today's game. And he's been the voice of the Bears, like I said, for almost 20 years now. Time does fly. Jeff Joniak will be joining us very shortly. You're listening to The Score. We'll be back right after this.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Out of the eye with Muhammad to the right. Snap to Grossman. Stretch the hand off to Jones. Throws it in reverse. Looking for blocking help. Running left. Cuts inside the 10. The 5. End zone. Touchdown. Touchdown Bears.
5:20, and welcome back into The Score for Sunday, March 29th. I'm David Schuster. I'm going to keep you company up until 8 o'clock this evening. Still to come here on the show, we're going to hear from former Bulls broadcaster Tom Doerr at 6:30 and Bruce Levine talking all things baseball at 7 o'clock. But right now, let's go out to the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline and Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park and bring in the voice you just heard on that Thomas Jones touchdown from that NFC title game is against New Orleans, Jeff Joniak. You can follow Jeff, as always, on Twitter, at Jeff Joniak. And Jeff, that was a great memory that day. And, you know, I was listening very closely throughout most of the broadcast, and I can hear your excitement growing and growing. And, boy, when they finally topped it off at the end of the game, you could feel the pride in your voice, not only for the Bears, the franchise, but also the city of Chicago. It was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's one of the chapters in this great sports city's sports history. And, you know, I listened to it, too. I didn't think I would, but Tom and I were texting each other throughout, and he had it on a transistor radio in his garage with his nephew. And, you know, that's the way, you know, we all grew up listening to football games and all sports on that transistor radio that he still has. And it's just, you know, it almost felt like somebody else calling the game, and I was just listening to him. And it just got me excited again about sports and football, and same thing with the Cubs rebroadcast, so we'll hear. And, you know, me personally, I love listening to old games way back to the 60s, 50s, 40s, and I certainly enjoyed that whole process right there. And a lot of the different names on that team stuck out, and the guys we had working on the broadcast, including the late Mark Zarang, our engineer, and the guy was a master. And it made you pause. It made you pause and think about what we used to be and what we all were 13 years ago.
100%. And I'm glad you mentioned Mark Zarang's name because, I mean, Mark was absolutely the best. And his brothers have continued on the tradition, the Zarang family, in broadcasting over all these years. But Mark was just such a good guy. And we miss him terribly. What else do you remember specifically about that game? Because for me, it was just such a prototypical Lovie Smith kind of game in the fact that his defense forced the 4 turnovers. They were outgained by 40 yards in that game. You remember, Jeff, by New Orleans, but the Bears held when they needed to hold. And Rex Grossman, you know, you heard all these good Rex, bad Rex, all that kind of stuff. But when he needed to be good, like he was on that third quarter touchdown right after the safety, 4 of 4 for 78 yards, he was really good then. And so to me, that was just a prototypical Lovie Smith kind of game.
Take the ball away, make the big plays, you know, suffered through some field goal drives early in the game. And, you know, Rex was a streaky quarterback. When he did get hot, he looked very good. And in that year, I believe that was the only year he played a full 16 games, the only year of his entire career, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he was streaky. He was streaky good in the opener against the Packers to start the whole ball rolling. And he was had spurts of excellence throughout that postseason. But, you know, besides all of that, no matter what, and I'm an old school football guy, and I'll say it 100 times, and Tommy said it in the broadcast. I mean, they had over 40 attempts rushing the football. So you run the ball and you play great defense, you're going to be in games. And I know Tommy in the broadcast said if the Bears run it 40 times in Miami, they'll be Super Bowl champions. And I haven't checked the math, but I can assure you we didn't run it 40 times in that game. And that offensive line wanted it. They wanted the game on their shoulders. They wanted, in those playoff games, they wanted the burden of clearing out the space and be the people movers that they were to create space for Thomas Jones, a beloved figure in that locker room, yeah. and Cedric Benson.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, we all remember, unfortunately, what ultimately happened in that Super Bowl. It certainly started out great, of course, with Hester with the touchdown. But even before we got to the game, what were those next 2 weeks like for you? Because you're going to and you've been to numerous Super Bowls now since, obviously, but what were those next 2 weeks for you as a broadcaster going to do your first Super Bowl on the air?
Well, I always regret not enjoying the journey. And, you know, Zach Zabin and I are close, and I talked to him about this many times. And you've known me since 1984, so working at Sports Phone. I sometimes don't enjoy the process. I get too worked up about everything that has to get done. And I remember being exhausted for that week of the game, going down to Miami, and just the prep that you all had to get ready for. You knew you had to be ready for the game by the time you got on that plane, because once you got to Super Bowl week, there was not going to be enough time to actually get ready for the game and focus. And that turned out to be the case. We were pulled in many, many different directions. And you just ran out of time, so to speak. And by Sunday, I was exhausted. Super Bowl Sunday, I was exhausted. We had to get to the stadium very early to do a television show. And you just sat around all day. But I had a hard time sleeping that week, just the excitement. And I've said it many times. You know, you grow up in this business, and who thinks they're going to actually call a Super Bowl or call a championship? You know, you hope to do it. It just doesn't something that it doesn't happen very often. And so the thrill of calling a Super Bowl or even calling an NFC championship game, you know, those are great memories to me and to the fans and to the people who've listened to us all these years. Now, this will be our 20th season coming up, or my 20th season coming up. It just lives with you. You know, this week, last Sunday, Zach asked me, you know, what was my, you know, favorite game or whatever. And I talk about this game. I mean, the Arizona game that season was certainly memorable. And from the drama of being down, you know, 24 points and coming back and winning without an offensive touchdown, that was a phenomenal game that you're never going to forget. And Bears fans are not going to forget. But the snow globe moment at the end of the game with the snow flying and Virginia with the trophy and Urlacher raising it, and just the being a home game, you know, it was a sensory overload, so to speak.
You know, it's funny, Jeff, you're bringing up stuff that I was even going to ask you about to begin with. And first of all, I always say time flies. You've been doing this for 20 years. I remember when you first got the gig, I was so happy and proud for you. And you've been doing this now, you know, expertly for 20 years. I was going to ask you for the one game that stood out, but you just answered my question. But I do want to go back to that Arizona game, and I was out there that day also. And what I remember most of all, and it's sort of overlooked, it's hard to overlook a Hall of Famer, but Brian Urlacher had how many tackles? It was 20-plus tackles in that game?
Well, I think officially 19, probably had a little more. You know, those are always an intangible that's depending on opinion when they break down the tape. But I don't remember what the coaches gave him, but I think on the actual box score, it's 19. Yeah, and I mentioned this last week. He was untouched. I mean, the guys up front were dominating at that point in the game. The second half was all Bears, and the defense rose to the occasion. They had to. The offense was stuck. They weren't getting anything done. And you had, you know, the return touchdowns. Talk about a lovey game. You had the return touchdowns, and you had a marauding Urlacher doing his thing. And he'll often say, you know, hey, you know, in numerical terms, it might have been his best game as a Bear, but in reality, he felt that the guys up front made it easy for him. So he was just filling gaps, as Lovey likes to say, and doing his thing.
Jeff, I always, you know, need to pinch myself saying that I was right on the front lines with Michael Jordan during his entire career. Well, you've been on the front lines for not only other sports, but certainly football. Brian Urlacher, a Hall of Famer, of course. Devin Hester, of course, will go into the Hall of Fame, and I think it'll be on his first try. What kind of kick is that for you?
Oh, yeah. You always, you know, even if the guys that you've called, and, you know, you mentioned MJ, and I was a part of all those championships being pre and post game and different roles during the Jordan era. And, you know, you remember the men they played, the Magics, the Birds, the Isaiah Thomases, and the same with the NFL. When I first started with the broadcast, I believe 97, 98, you know, if I got to see Barry Sanders, and then in 01 when I started calling games, and you hated the Packers, right? You still hate the Packers. You hate the excellence that they seemingly always seem to have over the Bears. And, you know, but I didn't look forward to calling a Brett Favre game as I do an Aaron Rodgers or anybody else. You want to call the greats. There's only so many that hang on to that distinction and warrant that kind of title. And so you look forward. The bigger the opponent in terms of the star recognition, the bigger you rise to the occasion. And you celebrate each and every one of those snaps. You know, I bring this up often. Years ago at one of the Super Bowls, before he passed away, got a chance to talk to Steve Sable. And he was, I introduced myself, and it was like I was somebody special to him. Not just me personally, but he loved the home team calls of NFL games. And he said, listen, we shoot the video and we marry it with the raw excitement and the passion of the play-by-play men who call the game. And that's what make those videos come alive. And I agree. It's you have to, you're charting the history of the game. And you're charting the history of the game, not just for your home team, but you're also charting the history of great moments. So your voice and your inflection and your passion has to rise to the great moments in the games, even if it's against the Bears.
Hey, Jeff, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, and we all pray that, you know, not only do we kick this virus as you know what, but there is a football season. Currently, the Bears made a lot of news over the last week or so, you know, bringing in Nick Foles and Jimmy Graham and Robert Quinn, just to name a few. And, you know, what's your optimism for all those picks, and do you like all those picks?
You know, everything on paper, you know, I'm not a big free agent fan. I've said this many times. I know you have to do it to fill holes, and you try and fill as many holes as you possibly can, whether it be role players or starters that you know you're not going to be able to get in the draft so that you can draft best player available. That's typically the case for every NFL team. So I get it. I just don't like, you know, the amount of money you have to spend to repair some mistakes along the way, you know, during a regime or whatnot. So, but on paper, I do love the Quinn acquisition. The Bears definitely needed another guy who's going to be able to get 10-plus sacks opposite Khalil Mack. So they kept the strength on the defense. Most of the attention has been on the defense in this part of free agency, and they've continued to add over the course of the last week or so pieces, guys that are going to fill specific roles, whether it be as a rotational player up front or in the secondary or at linebacker, and then also be a special teams core player. So those are necessary moves. It looks like the offense is going to have to be found potentially, you know, in the draft, whatever picks they have, and still some starting roles in the secondary. So, you know, I do like some of these precision strikes that needed to be filled. And, you know, yes, we'll wait and see. You got to, you know, as long as they got the right guys for the chemistry of the room. And that's to me an important part of this. They do believe in their chemistry and the type of culture they have. And as long as these guys fit into the culture, I'm sure they're handpicked for these very reasons, it should turn into good results during the regular season.
Well, speaking of culture and chemistry, I love bringing back Danny Trevathan, because not only is he a favorite of all us reporters because he's just a dream interview, you know, during the week and certainly after each and every game, win or loss, but he's obviously still a very effective player, and hopefully he overcomes that injury from last season. But I want to ask you specifically about Foles. Obviously, they traded the compensatory fourth-round pick to get him. You know, he will challenge Mitch Trubisky, and I think this potentially, hopefully, will bring out the best in Trubisky, and I like what the Bears are doing. You got two guys, and I think it's always important, two guys, and Trubisky has had some success. I mean, people might be down on him, but he's had success, obviously, at times. I think this will bring out the best of him, and may the best man win the job.
Yes, I mean, the offseason is going to complicate things when they do get back. You know, what will the time spent with coaches, and what's the time spent getting ready for this season, and how well each, because I don't know what the offense is going to look like. Matt Nagy has been brainstorming with his new coaching staff on the offensive side of the ball. So what are the tweaks? What's the change? How does it benefit Mitch? How does it incorporate Nick Foles? And so The competition, yes. But I, you know, knowing Mitch as I do, he's not afraid of any competition. Never has been and never will be. He is a competitor and always has been, no matter what it's been in his life. And I do think he will rise to the challenge. And when you have a guy like Foles, you know from his past experiences, wherever he's been, that he is in stretches of a time, can rise to challenge as well and be a winner. And both quarterbacks, because you know, Mitch hasn't stayed healthy all the time either. You need to know that you're going to have a guy that's going to be behind center that is going to be able to make plays and you can win because of, in addition to be with. So that's the delineation. And I know you can win because of Nick Foles. And I know that Mitch has shown you can win because of him. And that's just got to become more of a consistent operation. So it's the position that you have to have the most experience, success, quality, depth, whatever. And so I do feel good about what they got moving forward.
I know you were on the conference call with Jimmy Graham the other day, Jeff. Did you like what you heard out of him? Because
yes.
I don't want to use the word cocky, but he certainly can use the word confidence, and he seems like he's got that fire lit underneath him.
Yeah, and he's never been a guy that's lacked for confidence. He really hasn't. He's coming right into the league and earning his snaps with the Saints and blowing up there and having a great career in New Orleans and moving on to Seattle. I did like what he had to say because I think he feels like he had a thumb on him in Green Bay for whatever reason. You know, some people have said he can't run anymore. I disagree. I think he can still threaten the seam and be a big play type of player. The contract in and of itself of 2 years means that at his age, this is a guy that can help, whomever they bring in or cultivate from their current bevy of tight ends still on the roster, numbering 8 or 9, that can show the way a little bit and have that experience in the tight end room to help that process. So, hey, you know, if a guy's motivated, and it came very clear that he feels like he didn't get his opportunities in Green Bay, that he'll get him here in Chicago, and that's the reason they brought him here. So, yeah, I was very encouraged with what he had to say.
Two last things with Jeff Joniak, the voice of the Chicago Bears. Jeff, you know, knock on wood, again, God willing, we kick this virus as you know what, and the preseason and the training camp all unfolds. Do you think that Matt Nagy will do things differently this year than he did last year? Meaning, do you think he'll play some of the players a little bit more so in preseason games, if there are preseason games?
It's a great question. I don't know. I mean, they were pretty serious about why they didn't play the starters a year ago. And I think the trend is that in the league not to, but, you know, hopefully I do believe it's going to be, if there's a training camp, I believe it's going to be an intense, hard training camp. And I think there is a resolute desire to make sure that everybody is seriously dialed in and ready to go. And if that's the case, then yes, I'd be very happy that they play some guys and play those starters at some level in the preseason. But, you know, seasons can get destroyed by injury too. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that many, many times. So there's got to be that fine line that's got to be walked. And hopefully they will have a training camp. I think it will benefit the Bears a great deal, more than other teams right now. This offense, this new creation, whatever it's going to be, I think it's going to require some, you know, ramp up. So it doesn't help if you're not going to have a full off season. It certainly wouldn't help if you didn't have a full training camp.
Yeah, and last thing here, Jeff. Again, 20 years doing this thing and 20 years with your buddy Tom Thayer. You guys have such great chemistry with each other, and I knew you probably consider him like a brother. And I'm just wondering, you know, what it's been like working with him both on and off the air. And I have a feeling that if one of you started a sentence, the other guy could probably finish it. That's how close you two guys seem to be.
Well, unfortunately, I am quite interruptive, and sometimes he gets on me. Hey, let me talk. He gets me excited about football, that's why. But, yeah, he's not only one of my best friends, and in many respects could very well be defined as my best friend because we talk very much every day. He's also my kid's uncle. He's the big brother I never had. He's my grandpa at times. He's, the fun uncle that, you know, can get a little crazy. He's all that wrapped in one. But most importantly, he's a guy, he's a professional. And that's the thing about it. And just listening to I called him up and I said today, during the second quarter of today's game, I said, the way you just makes you simplify the way things are during the course of a game and how we set each other up and whatnot. And we got to remember that, because sometimes when things aren't good, you kind of lose where you are a little bit. And our job is to call the plays and call the game and paint the picture. But sometimes your emotions get the best of you and you get down when things aren't going well. And I do think it affects your broadcast. So it was a little bit of a learning tool. Granted, it was the NFC Championship game. We're going to be hyped up no matter what. But I'm grateful to be working with him. And I've said that from the time I got started. He's taught me the game at a level that can best be described as going to graduate school and getting your doctorate in football. He's taught me the minutia of it, the subtle movements of footwork and hand placement and why it matters. And the way I look at tape and how I watch tape, it can only be because of Tom Thayer. So I appreciate his genuine love of the game and his genuine passion for doing the work necessary to have a good broadcast. And now that our lives have changed very drastically, even from that 13 years ago, January of 2007, the amount of things we do now because of the requirements of working with the Bears on their social media and websites and what we do for WBBM and Entercom in general, it's a vast requirement of being flexible and being versatile, and he has adapted to that quite well.
Well, you mentioned that he's a professional, and Jeff, no one's more professional than you, and like I said at the beginning,
thanks,
I'm so proud and happy
for
all your success, and Jeff, nobody works harder than Jeff Joniak, and I see that all the time. Jeff, I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for the kind words, David. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Jeff. All right, that's Jeff Joniak, voice of the Chicago Bears. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to throw some topics out to you. In fact, let's do that right now, even before we go to break. You know, there's been so much criticism over the years of Rex Grossman. Rex Grossman was not even close to being one of the worst Bears quarterbacks in the franchise history, but it is a theme, unfortunately. And I go back quite a few years, and there's been some really bad quarterbacks in Bears history. So I'll just throw it out there. Who are some of the quarterbacks that you just couldn't stand to be under center watching Bear games over the years? Some of the worst Bears quarterbacks in franchise history. Give us a call, 312-644-6767. You can text us at 67011. Again, we appreciate Jeff joining us here on The Score. We'll be back right after this.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
5:45, welcome back into The Score for Sunday, March 29th. David Schuster here. I'm going to keep you company up until 8 o'clock this evening. Our number is always 312-644-6767. Of course, you can text us at 67011. And the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. I threw out right before the break, oh boy, this list is absolutely endless. And we're going to get Adam's thoughts on that back from the studio downtown in just a second also. But the list of worst Bears quarterbacks, boy, we could fill up a whole show with that one. And Lord knows, I've seen a lot of bad ones over the years. And I'm reading some of the text here. You're making me laugh already. One person from the 920 area code says, you're supposed to be picking up our spirits, and now you're getting ready to talk about Jonathan Quinn, Craig Krenzel, Peter Tom Willis. Oh, my. Yeah, I am, unfortunately, because I know this will get the phones going, and I would love to hear from you. Like I said, there's been some awful Bears quarterbacks over the years. I'm going to read some of your text here in a moment, but again, you can call us at 312-644-6767. I'm going to just give you a couple of names off my list. And actually, I think the worst one I ever saw was Jonathan Quinn, although Mike Glennon in his four games that he played certainly was the most overpaid bad quarterback. You realize, folks, that he got $18.5 million for the four games that he played. Four games before they finally said enough is enough. $18.5 million for the four games. Blows my mind even to this day. Jonathan Quinn, Craig Krenzel, Cordell Stewart, Dave Craig, Henry Burris, Will Fuhrer, Rick Meyer, Peter Tom Willis, Steve Stenstrom, and going further back, Bob Avellini, Jack Concannon, Vince Evans, Gary Huff, Brian Greasy for the short time, Kyle Orton, Larry Rakestraw going way back. Cade McNown is certainly in the running for one of the worst Bears quarterbacks of all time. And if not, you know, if he wasn't the worst, he certainly was, you know, again, a very overpaid. He was a top draft pick. And he was such a disappointment because they expected something out of him. And he wasn't really, you know, nice to the fans either. I remember one time in training camp in Platteville, he was driving a golf cart, and he almost knocked some fans over who were trying to get an autograph from him. He just went right by them. So, again, the list of bad quarterbacks is absolutely endless. Todd Collins is another one that somebody is mentioning. Bobby Douglas. Bobby Douglas, you know, he had a couple of games that really stood out. Now, first of all, Bobby Douglas for a long time held the record before. Was it Cam Newton who finally broke the record for rushing yards by a quarterback? I mean, Douglas had almost 1,000 yards one year, and he would run over people because he was bigger than some of the guys in the secondary that would try and tackle him. And he also had this one game, and I know Grobstein will remember this. I think he threw 4 touchdown passes. I think it was against Buffalo. And then it was determined after the game that he did that with a broken wrist, of all things. So a lot of bad Bear quarterbacks over the years. Adam, you had some people on your own list? Adam, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, David. Sorry, I was
okay, I'm sorry.
Something. All right,
I'm just curious. You said,
can you pitch
you
the question to me again? My
list?
Bad. I was taking care of something back here.
No problem. So you said you had some list of Bear quarterbacks also that you thought were not up to snuff?
Oh, yeah, man. Okay, first of all, let's start off with Todd Collins. I know the texter immediately identified him. He might be the worst quarterback I've ever seen in the NFL. He didn't even look like an NFL player. It was so bad watching him, and I remember my heart just breaking in half when he came into the game after Jay Cutler got injured in the NFC Championship game against the Packers. I was like, that's it. Like, we're not winning a game with this guy at quarterback. Not this game, anyway. I know they did actually win a game with him playing quarterback that season. I don't know how they did it, but it was probably because Jimmy Clausen was the other quarterback in that game. But I could go on for days about Todd Collins. And then you have the likes of Jonathan Quinn. My God, was he awful. You have, oh my God, Craig Krenzel. The guys at Texas are bringing, just brought him up. Craig Krenzel, oh my gosh. Henry Burris. You know what's astounding about Henry Burris is he was so bad in the NFL, and he goes to Canada, and he's a superstar.
Yeah, but that's a whole different sport. I mean,
I know it
there.
Is. It definitely is. Don't get me wrong. But I was looking up his numbers in the Canadian Football League. He's got, I think, 3 championships up there. His numbers, his passing yards, would be in the top 5 of the NFL all time. I mean, that's all I'm saying is that maybe he deserves a shot at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Because it says Pro Football Hall of Fame. There's not a qualifier of NFL Hall of Fame. I'm just throwing that out there. But anyway, oh, God, Chad Hutchison, that's another bad one.
Yeah, I'm laughing because someone says, don't forget Chad Hutchison. I try to forget Chad Hutchison. He's on my list of terrible quarterbacks. There were so many bad ones. And there was a stretch where there was so many bad ones. And you made mention of them where Krenzel and Quinn and Todd Collins. And, you know, they all had, unfortunately, opportunities to try and win games and I mean, there would be times where, like, you take a look and they're, what do you mean, they're 2 of 13 for, like, 6 yards? Something ridiculous like that? Oh, and there are so many bad quarterbacks. And like I said, I'm going a much further back into my youth. And Bob Avellini, there was a lot of things about him. I'm taking a look at his career numbers right now. 33 touchdowns, 69 interceptions. Wow. Vince Evans, 31 touchdowns, 53 interceptions. So, yeah, there's a lot. And man, we talked about Cordell Stewart. Cordell Stewart played 12 games for the Bears. He had 7 interceptions in those 12 games. So, you know, some really bad numbers by some really bad quarterbacks over all those years. Will Freer is another guy. Rick Meyer, didn't they trade like a first-round pick? You might not remember him, to be honest with you, Adam. But
I don't.
I think the Bears traded.
Do you know when he was here?
What year he was here?
Yeah, ish. What about what
year?
Yeah,
gosh. I'm really bad on years. They all seem to like,
if it was
run
before,
in.
If it was, but I don't remember really any Bears quarterbacks before Eric Kramer, and I don't even remember watching him play. I just
it
know
was,
about
it was,
him.
It was right around there. I'll just say that. I can't remember. I'm terrible on years, like I said. I'm sure some of our texters will let us know. Oh, here's another one, Rusty Lish. Moses Moreno. Oh, my God. See, this list is absolutely endless of people. You'd have to look up the year, but the Bears did trade a first-round pick to get Rick Meyer. That much I remember. He, of course, played his college ball at Notre Dame. So if you figure out what his years were at Notre Dame, you can figure out what year he was with the Bears also.
Some really right, bad I just ones looked him up right now. Okay, here we go. So Rick Meyer in 1997 came to Chicago, and he went 0-3. His completion percentage was 51. That's not too bad. He had no touchdowns and 6 interceptions in 3 games, which is horrible. Yards per attempt was 6.
See, I'm laughing about this now, and you can laugh about it now. But back then when these quarterbacks were out there, I guarantee you, because I was doing it too, I would be, you know, if I wasn't at a game, you got to be professional when you're at the game. But when you're not at the game and you're sitting at home and you're watching some of this, you scream at the TV. You're not laughing then. You're screaming at the TV. And if I take a look at all these names, it reminds me how much I used to scream at the TV, like I'm sure most people who are listening to this show right now would probably have the same thought going back in time when they heard of some of these quarterbacks that we're bringing up.
And, you know, we were mentioning earlier, Jonathan Quinn and Craig Krenzel, those guys were in the same season. We had to endure. I think it was Jonathan Quinn, Craig Krenzel, and...
I thought Collins was around that time also.
Todd Collins, no. Todd Collins wasn't until 2010, I believe. Yeah, and Chad Hutchison was the other quarterback that season. Oh, I think that was like, what, 2003? It was one of the worst seasons of Bears quarterbacks play you're ever going to get. The Todd Collins year was in the 2010 season when the Bears ended up going to the NFC Championship. I think they were 12-4. They were the number 2 seed in the NFC. There was, you know, it was probably Jay's overall best season with the Bears. And for some reason, they thought Todd Collins was still good enough to be the second string quarterback, even though he was so bad in the one game he played. And then I'm blanking on the third string guy they brought in that almost brought him back. He wore number 12. I can see his face. Oh, man. Irrelevant because they still lost. But anyway, that one season was so bad because just Quinn and Krenzel, and they even won a couple games with Craig Krenzel. I think they won at least 2 or 3 games with Chad Hutchison. They thought he was the guy, and it was awful.
Here's another name on the list that people are sending in. Caleb Haney, who was pretty
That's
awful.
The one I was trying to think of, Caleb Haney.
Now, if they want, okay, a couple of people are now texting that in. He was not good, but you said he won a couple of games. I'm sure it wasn't because of him.
Oh, no. I was saying I might have got my words crossed up there. Chad Hutchison won a couple games for the Bears. Caleb Haney, I don't know if he ever started a game. If he did, it was like 1 or 2. I don't know if he ever won a start, if he did. But he came in the fourth quarter, I believe, of that NFC Championship game and almost brought them back. Well, his first pass was a pick 6 to B.J. Raji, which ended up basically being the difference in the game. But after that, he almost brought them back.
You know, when I took a look at the list of, you know, and there's always list on if you want to Google them or whatever, list of bad bear quarterbacks or worst bear quarterbacks, they do bring up Jay Cutler a lot, but I think more so because he was a disappointment that he didn't get more out of the ability that he had. I mean, Jay Cutler had a really strong arm. Jay Cutler had his moments where he was really good. Jay Cutler also had his moments where he was atrocious. And I remember one game when I was out in San Francisco, I believe it was, and he threw like 5 interceptions or something like that. And I think it was all in the first half. So, yeah, I mean, good and bad with a lot of these guys, but some of these guys were just plain bad. And I think you made mention of all of them. All right, let's take another break. When we come back, we'll throw a couple more topics out on the table. Again, we still have Tom Doerr, who's going to join us at 6:30. Today is the 25-year anniversary of Michael Jordan scoring his 55 points. And, of course, our buddy Bill Winnington scoring the game-winning basket against the New York Knicks. So we'll talk to Tom about that. And then at 7 o'clock, Bruce Levine will join us to talk everything, what's going on in the world and what's not going on in the world of baseball. We'll be doing that with Bruce at 7 o'clock. 312-644-6767. We'll be back right after this.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.